Welcome to the Farm to Table Talk podcast, where we talk about our food system from what we eat to how it's grown. I'm your host, Roger Wasson. There are so many people wondering what's happening in food and agriculture in the United States. There's appointments taking place, there's policies being talked about. Probably no group is any more in the middle of it than the Environmental Working Group. And we've had a guest on before that was very popular, Ken Cook. And Ken's with us again this morning. Ken, I have to ask you, as you're into 2017, what are your priorities? How do you pick just one? But what are your priorities from the Environmental Working Group looking ahead, especially at food and agriculture?
Well, we ask ourselves that question every morning, literally, Roger, when we have a staff meeting, and we do that every day. You know, I think all of us are thinking that this could be a period of enormous challenges for our agenda, which is to help create the circumstances for sustainable agriculture. Farmers making a good living, consumers getting ever healthier food. Obviously, we have a goal to try and expand the importance of organic agriculture, which is one of the reasons I'm here at EcoFarm today to meet with some of the growers and processors and retailers who come here by the hundreds. But it's hard to see at this stage how that's going to be an easy lift. I will say that no matter who had won the election in November, the expectation on our part was we were going to have a lot of hard work cut out for us. But with President Trump, despite what he says about from time to time being a strong environmentalist and having received awards for being an environmentalist, our feeling really is that you have to judge him by his early appointments, and those are not encouraging. I mean, that's the first set of policies you put in place is who you pick to run the government. We're very concerned about the former Oklahoma Attorney General. He's still current Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt running EPA. His testimony before the Senate committee that will confirm him or vote on him was very discouraging for us. He didn't seem to know basic things like what a safe level of lead was, which you have two federal agencies, the Centers for Disease Control and EPA, both saying there's no safe level of lead. We need to get it out of human contact as best we can, certainly kids. So basics like that make us fear for the importance that will be attached to the connection between the environment and human health and the environment and protecting natural resources and ecosystems. In agriculture, we're very concerned that in the push to cut spending, conservation programs will be slashed. We're very concerned that instead of making our food assistance programs more oriented toward healthy eating, we might just cut the benefits or try and block grant them. So many of these questions we don't have answers to. No one does. I think you hear every day someone saying that they really have never had an incoming president in their memory, that there were so many questions about the direction he would take policy or she would take policy. And in this case, you know, the questions are even bigger because it seems like from one day to the next, we're chasing all kinds of crazy stories like how many illegals voted or whether we're going to build a wall between the United States and Mexico or all these other issues that really make me concerned for the ability to have a focus on the important things facing the country.
Well, if you take the two groups you talked about, the environmental side and in particular back at the USDA, the one level is naming whoever is going to be the administrator in case of EPA or the secretary and then the deputy secretaries. And then they'll start looking to people to put into these other positions. And there are hundreds of positions in both.
That's correct.
And so they'll run an agency and they'll come in over this next 6 months and it probably won't be totally done before 2017 is over with. But as they come in, what's their real power? I mean, because in agriculture, you've got a farm bill. And so farm bill drives a lot of budgeting and policy programs. But then there's evidently a range of other programs that there's some that they're able to either executive actions or or affect existing regulations without legislation. Is that right?
That's correct. I mean, there's the White House does have a fair amount of power, let's face it, and the power is never greater than it is now because he doesn't have that second and third and fourth tier of appointees in there to be making these decisions. Eventually, they'll be making almost all of them, and the White House will only get the tough ones. The hard ones will only land on the president's desk. But there's lots of layers in between, and they'll make important decisions about which programs get funded and at what level and which ones do not. That's part of our concern, that there will be a tendency, I think, to cut some of the programs that we feel are vital, conservation assistance programs to farmers who are trying to do the right thing and want a little help from the government to match their investment. We've always thought that was a really important way to go about dealing with some of these issues in agriculture. What is the approach going to be? We just can't tell. And if there's a really strong push to cut taxes so that the revenue isn't there, and then you have to make up for the loss in revenue by reducing spending, what gets reduced? And if you look at what the president said on the campaign trail, he made a big point, particularly in the heartland, which he won overwhelmingly, of saying that the people in that area had been left behind or forgotten. And a lot of people responded to that, felt like they'd been left out of decisions like NAFTA, left out of decisions about health care reform. For better or worse, that's what they felt, and he was going to address that. Now, you have to ask yourself just how much someone who lives on Fifth Avenue between 56th and 57th in a triplex penthouse knows about rural America. Central Park is probably the most rural area near him. But let's just look at it. I mean, no one has done less in a way for rural America than the politicians rural America has sent to represent them in Washington. Look at the budget for rural development in the Farm Bill. There's almost no money there. Unless it's subsidies for large landowners, the farmers who dominate, or unless it's crop insurance for the very large farm operations that most benefit from it, this is not a tradition, it has not been a tradition, to actually look and see what those areas of the country need. And a lot of parts of the Midwest, even though there's vast areas of agricultural land, I'm from the Midwest myself, the economies out there have been much more diversified for a long time. And I think the future, to the degree that we have one in agriculture for employment in those places, is value-added types of activities that Congress has perennially been stingy in supporting. So it's a question really of not just what Mr. Trump might bring to the discussion, but really, is this going to be an opportunity for us to say, hey, if you're going to take care of the forgotten people in rural America, you're going to have to operate differently. You can't come through with the same farm bill you've had, with a heavy emphasis on crop insurance and subsidy programs for that benefit, 70% of the money goes to the top 10% of the beneficiaries. If you think that's a future that's going to create lots of jobs, then we can just continue doing what we're doing. And I worry about that with Secretary Designate
Sonny Perdue.
That's right, because he comes from that sort of school. But if you're really thinking we're going to bring jobs back to rural America, we're going to try and make economic activity and opportunity a central part of agriculture for lots more people than the folks who now either inherit land or can afford to buy it, if you're going to do that, you're going to have a different program, mm-hmm. a different investment portfolio, very different than we've had. And again, I would suggest to anybody, go to the Department of Agriculture and look in their economic pages that describe the Farm Bill from the last one we had in 2014. Look at the money we allocated to rural development there, or any other topic that wasn't central to either the food assistance program, which is about 80% of the money, the SNAP program, or the subsidy program, the conservation program. After that, there's not much left. So we need to really give that some serious thought, and I think there could be some real common ground between environmentalists and rural America. There's always been, to my mind, but there could be even more if we come up with an agenda that does create real real economic opportunity.
Well, and I just want to point out that there's an example, say, in the last 8 years, that there was discretionary funds found to work on farmers markets, to work on urban agriculture. Even though they weren't driven by specific parts of the Farm Bill, they were able to get a pretty substantial programs of farm to school and know your farmer, know your food, and all of those things. Those came out of apparently an attitude.
Yes.
On the part of that administration.
That's right.
So the new one can have an attitude too.
Right. No, that's exactly right. And I think, I think that in the case of agriculture in particular, there are tremendous opportunities out there now. But it's not like they're easy to, problems aren't easy to solve, but how do you get more value in the rural communities that are growing the fruits and vegetables and grain and livestock that we're all dependent on? How do you get them to maintain more of the value there? You don't do it, I think, by turning a blind eye to consolidation in the industry. I don't think you do it by turning a blind eye to the power that the top levels of the livestock industry have over the folks who raise the animals. I think you have to have an aggressive agenda that looks at these problems. I don't think the previous administration looked aggressively enough. Look at these problems and say, okay, is this the right mix of economic rules of the road? Or are we going to continue to leave people behind by simply letting big farms get bigger, livestock operations consolidate further, control of pesticides and fertilizers be in fewer and fewer hands? If that seems like growth and economic progress, well, we're on that track already. But if you want to really try and remember the people who supposedly have been forgotten in rural America, you need to really look and see what needs to be done to give them those economic opportunities.
Well, you know, Ken, right now there's not anything specific that people can line up behind, like legislation or like something in the Farm Bill that they're trying to communicate. It seems to me that what you and other organizations are doing are trying to generate this conversation like you're just talking about here. I see all kinds of panels, of meetings, of people starting to raise the issues you're raising. And I suppose it's that the hope that conversation goes to your members, goes to other people who'll be engaged, and that no matter what their politics, that they engage their own congressional delegation in these talks.
That's right. I mean, if you're a supporter of President Trump, obviously you should stay involved in the political system. If you're part of the resistance, if you're not, you know, if that's a team sport too, if you're resisting on your own in front of your computer, you might just be moping. It might really not be resistance. And so what we're saying to people is, look, this is a call to people across the spectrum. Get engaged, have these conversations. We have some real problems to solve here, and it's not about how many illegals voted or whether we build a wall in Mexico. We have real serious issues that we need to take on here about how to create economic opportunity around the country. And I'm finding that a lot of people are willing to, in my world, are willing to step out of their silo, out of their specialty, and ask themselves, okay, who can I be working with, talking to, who might be tackling a different part of the food problem, and we can work together arm in arm and make some progress, people I might not ordinarily, or organizations I might not ordinarily work before with. And I think that's true of environment and agriculture, too. I think there needs to be some discussions. We're starting some of those in Washington now with friends and frenemies alike, mm-hmm. and hoping that we can find some common ground, because this is a president who comes in, again, from Fifth Avenue Penthouseville, mm-hmm. and has seen rural America from the air and from the stage at rallies and the limousine rides in between to his private plane. This is not someone who comes from the Midwest, and I think if we're going to bring back some of that energy and create jobs, we'll need to approach it differently. And then there's, you know, places like we are now in California that soundly rejected President Trump's candidacy and supported his opponent. That hardly matters now. He won the White House, but it matters in the sense that I think there's a lot of people out here in California who see environment and agriculture very differently. And they see the need and the opportunity to bring them together. That's why you see the stronger rules, the stronger commitments out here amongst farmers in many cases, the willingness to accept a degree of regulation because they're right up against all their neighbors and they know that has to happen. That I think in some ways is more of a model for where we would like to see the rest of the country go than exporting what might be an ideology about just growth at any cost. Katie bar the door and bring that out here to California. I don't think that's going to happen. I think part of the resistance is going to be, look, we're trying to do it right here. We're up against these very difficult balances between environment, economic profit, water supplies, and all the rest. And I think we're working out those problems here in some creative ways. We've still got a long way to go. It'll always be work. But it's very different than assuming that we need to go forward with more of what we've been doing already in the rest of agricultural policy. That's not a future, I think, that's going to create the economic opportunity or the environmental benefits that we want.
Well, I'm going to wrap up here, but just one quick thing. First of all, I assume that you're kind of an open book. If people want to know what's going on with the Environmental Working Group, they can find you online and lots of activities. So if they want to keep track and they'll see where you are in this journey. Yeah. Well, I just have one final question, and that is, how about people that are sitting on the sidelines right now and they're anxious? I mean, whether they voted, whichever side they voted, they're kind of anxious. Do you have any suggestions for them of how they can be prepared to engage or to stay on top of this?
I do. I mean, pick one issue that's really, really dear to you and find a way to connect with an organization that agrees with you, and then start exploring some of the organizations that maybe don't agree with you. And try and by doing that, see if you can get out of the bubble that we're all in with the media these days. We all have our favorite websites, our favorite channels, our favorite cable stations, and so forth. It's very easy to get locked into a worldview and be taken by surprise, as a lot of people were, myself included, in November. I would say the time now is one of exploration and getting out of your silo and seeing what's adjacent to you, seeing the different perspectives, because we know we're not going to move forward if we just keep this partisan rancor as the defining feature of American civic life. We have to do better, and I think that has to come from the people, not the politicians.
Well, Ken, I'm really glad to have you at the Farm to Table Talk, and you belong at a lot of tables, and you'll be at those tables, and we appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Roger, thank you.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson. If you like what you hear, go to farmtotabletalk.com and follow us on SoundCloud, Facebook, and Twitter, or go to iTunes to subscribe and give us a review and a rating. Thanks for listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.